fist. Don't do that. A muscle feathered in his jaw. Don't look at me like that.
Like what?
With that disgust.
I'm not...
But he gave her a sharp look. She sighed.
This? All this, Rowan.
She waved a hand to the map, to the doors that the demi-fae had passed through, to the sounds of people readying their supplies and defenses in the courtyard.
For whatever it's worth,
all of this just proves that she doesn't deserve you. I think you know that, too. He looked away.
That isn't your concern.
I know. But I thought you should still hear it. He didn't respond,
wouldn't even meet her eyes, so she walked away. She looked over her shoulder once, to find him still hunched over the table, hands braced on its surface, the powerful muscles of his back visible through his shirt. And she knew he wasn't looking at the map. Not really. But saying that she wished he could return with her to Otterlin, to Terrasen, was pointless. He had no way to break his oath to Maeve, and she had nothing to entice him with, even if he could. She was not a queen. She had no plans to be one, and even if she had a kingdom to give him if he were free. Telling him all that was useless. So she left Rowan in the hall. But it did not stop her from wishing she could keep him. The next afternoon, after washing her face and bandaging a burn on her forearm in Rowan's room, Selena was just coming down to help with the dinner preparations when she felt, rather than heard, the ripple of silence through the fortress, deeper and heavier than the nervous quiet that had hovered over the compound the last few days. The fortress had not been this tense since that first night Maeve had been here. It was too soon for her aunt to be checking on her. She had little to show so far other than a few somewhat useful tricks and her various shields. She took the stairs two at a time until she reached the kitchen. If Maeve learned about the invasion and ordered Rowan to leave, breathing, thinking, those were the key tools to enduring this encounter. The heat and yeasty scent hit her as she bounded down the last steps, slowing her gait, lifting her chin, even though she doubted her aunt would condescend to meet in the kitchen, unless she wanted her unbalanced. But Maeve was not in the kitchen. Rowan was, and his back was to her as he stood at the other end with Emrys, Malachi, and Luca, talking quietly. Selena stopped dead as she beheld Emrys's too pale face, the hand gripping Malachi's arm. As Rowan turned to her, lips thin and eyes wide with shock and horror and grief, the world stopped dead too. Rowan's arms hung slack at his sides, his fingers clenching and unclenching. For a heartbeat, she wondered if she went back upstairs, whatever he had to say would not be true. Rowan took a step toward her. One step. And that was all it took before she began shaking her head, before she lifted her hands in front of her as if to push him away.
Please,
she said, and her voice broke. Please. Rowan kept approaching, the bearer of some inescapable doom, and she knew that she could not outrun it, and could not fall on her knees and beg for it to be undone. Rowan stopped within reach, but did not touch her, his features hardening again. Not from cruelty, because he knew, she realized, that one of them would have to hold it together. He needed to be calm. He needed to keep his wits about him for this. Rowan swallowed once. Twice.
There was an uprising at the Calicala labor camp,
he said. Her heart stumbled on a beat.
after Princess Nehemia was assassinated. They say a slave girl killed her overseer and sparked an uprising. The slaves seized the camp.
He took a shallow breath.
The King of Otterland sent 2 legions to get the slaves under control. And they killed them all.
The slaves killed his legions? A push of breath. There were thousands of slaves in Calakala. All of them together would be a mighty force, even for 2 of Otterland's legions. With horrific gentleness, Rowan grasped her hand.
No. The soldiers killed every slave in Calakala.
A crack in the world, through which a keening wail pushed in like a wave.
There are thousands of people enslaved in Calakala.
The resolve in Rowan's countenance splintered as he nodded. And when he opened and closed his mouth, she realized it was not over. The only word she could breathe was,
Endovir?
It was a fool's plea.
Slowly, so slowly, Rowan shook his head.
Once he got word of the uprising in Ilway, the King of Otterland sent 2 other legions north. None were spared in Endovir.
She did not see Rowan's face when he gripped her arms as if he could keep her from falling into the abyss. No. All she could see were the slaves she'd left behind, the ashy mountains and those mass graves they dug every day, the faces of her people who had worked beside her, her people whom she had left behind, whom she had let herself forget, had let suffer, who had prayed for salvation, holding out hope that someone, anyone would remember them. She had abandoned them, and she had been too late. Nehemia's people, the people of other kingdoms, and her people, the people of Terrasen, the people her father and mother and court had loved so fiercely. There had been rebels in Endovir, rebels who fought for her kingdom when she had been. There were children in Endovir, in Calakala. She had not protected them. The kitchen walls and ceiling crushed her, the air too thin, too hot. Rowan's face swam as she panted, faster and faster. He murmured her name too softly for the others to hear. And the sound of it, that name that had once been a promise to the world, the name she had spat on and defiled, the name she did not deserve. She tore off his grip, and then she was walking out the kitchen door, across the courtyard, through the ward stones, and along the invisible barrier, until she found a spot just out of sight of the fortress. The world was full of screaming and wailing, so loud she drowned in it. Selena did not utter a sound as she unleashed her magic on the barrier, a blast that shook the trees and set the earth rumbling. She fed her power into the invisible wall, begging the ancient stones to take it, to use it. The wards, as if sensing her intent, devoured her power whole, absorbing every last ember until it flickered, hungry for more. So she burned and burned and burned. Chapter 49. For weeks now, Kaol hadn't had any contact with any of his friends, allies, whatever they had been. So one last time, Kaol slipped into the rhythm of his old duties. Though it was more difficult than ever to oversee the king's luncheons, though making his reports was an effort of will, he did it. He had heard nothing from Adian or Wren, and still hadn't yet asked Dorian to use his magic to test out their theories about the spell. He was starting to wonder if he was done playing his part in Adian's growing rebellion. He'd gathered enough information, crossed enough lines. Perhaps it was time to learn what could be done from Aniel. He would be closer to Morath, and maybe he could uncover what the king was brewing down there. The king had accepted his plans to take up his mantle as heir to Aniel with hardly any objections. Soon he was to present options for a replacement. Kaol was currently standing guard at a state luncheon in the Great Hall, which Adian and Dorian were both attending. The doors had been thrown open to welcome in the spring air, and Kaol's men were standing at each one, weapons at the ready. Everything was normal. Everything was going smoothly. Until the king stood, his black ring seeming to gobble up the midday sun streaming in through the towering windows. He lifted a goblet, and the room fell silent. Not in the way it did when Adian spoke. Kaol hadn't been able to stop thinking about what the general had said to him, about choosing a side. Or what Dorian had said, about his refusal to accept Selena and the prince for what they really were. Over and over again, he'd contemplated it. But nothing could prepare Kaol, or anyone in that silent hall, as the king smiled to the tables below his dais and said,
"Good news arrived this morning from Ealhwaay and the north. The Calicala slave rebellion has been dealt with."
They'd heard nothing of it, and Kaol wished he could cover his ears as the king said,
"We'll have to work to replenish the mines, there and in Andovir, but the rebel taint has been purged."
Kaol was glad he was leaning against a pillar. It was Dorian who spoke, his face bone white.
"What are you talking about?"
His father smiled at him.
"Forgive me. It seems the slaves in Calicala got it into their heads to start an uprising after Princess Nehemia's unfortunate death. We got it into our heads not to allow it, or any other potential uprisings. And as we didn't have the resources to devote to interrogating each and every slave to weed out the traitors."
Kaol understood what strength it took for Dorian not to shake his head in horror, as he did the calculations, and understood just how many people had been slaughtered.
"General Ashriver," the king said.
Adian sat motionless.
"You and your bane will be pleased to know that since the purge in Andovir, many of the rebels in your territory have ceased their antics. It seems they did not want a fate similar to that of their friends in the mines."
Kaol didn't know how Adian found the courage and will. But the general smiled and bowed his head.
"Thank you, Majesty."
Dorian burst into Sorsha's workroom. She jumped from her spot at the table, a hand on her chest.
"Did you hear?"
he asked, shutting the door behind him. Her eyes were red enough to suggest that she had. He took her face in his hands, pressing his brow against hers, needing that cool strength. He didn't know how he kept from weeping or vomiting or killing his father on the spot. But looking at her, breathing in her rosemary and mint scent, he knew why.
"I want you out of this castle," he said. "I'll give you the funds, but I want you away from here as soon as you can find a way to go without raising suspicion."
She yanked out of his grasp.
"Are you mad?"
No. He'd never seen anything more clearly.
"If you stay, if we are caught, I will give you whatever money you need."
"No money you offer could convince me to leave."
"I'll tie you to a horse if I have to. I'm getting you out."
"And who will look after you? Who will make your tonics? You're not even talking to the captain anymore. How could I leave now?"
He gripped her shoulders. She had to understand. He had to make her understand. Her loyalty was one of the things he loved. But now, it would only get her killed.
"He murdered thousands of people in one sweep. Imagine what he'll do if he finds you've been helping me. There are worse things than death, Sorsha. Please. Please, just go.
Her fingers found his, entwining tight. Come with me.
I can't. It will get worse if I leave, if my brother is made heir. And I think I know of some people who might be trying to stop him. If I am here, perhaps I can help them in some way.
Oh, Kaol. He understood completely now why he had sent Selena to Wendlin. Understood that his return to Aniel. Kaol had sold himself to get Selena to safety.
If you stay, I stay, Sorsha said. You cannot convince me otherwise.
Please,
he said. Because he didn't have it in him to yell, not with the deaths of those people hanging over him.
Please.
But she brushed her thumb across his cheek. Together. We'll face this together. And it was selfish and horrible of him, but he put up no further argument. Kaol went to the tomb for privacy, to mourn, to scream. But he was not alone. Adian was sitting on the steps of the spiral stairwell, his forearms braced on his knees. He didn't turn as Kaol set down his candle and sat beside him.
What do you suppose?
Adian breathed, staring into the darkness.
The people on other continents, across all those seas, think of us. Do you think they hate us or pity us for what we do to each other? Perhaps it's just as bad there. Perhaps it's worse. But to do what I have to do, to get through it, I have to believe it's better. Somewhere it's better than this.
Kaol had no answer.
I have...
Adian's teeth gleamed in the light.
I have been forced to do many, many things. Depraved, despicable things. Yet nothing made me feel as filthy as I did today, thanking that man for murdering my people.
There was nothing he could say to console him. Nothing he could promise. So Kaol left Adian staring into the darkness. There was not one empty seat in the royal theater that night. Every box and tier was crammed with nobility, merchants, whoever could afford the ticket. Jewels and silk gleamed in the light of the glass chandeliers, the riches of a conquering empire. The news about the slave massacres had struck that afternoon, spreading through the city on a wave of murmuring, leaving only silence behind. The upper tiers of the theater were unusually still, as if the audience had come to be soothed, to let the music sweep away the stain of the news. Only the boxes were full of chatter, about what this meant for the fortunes of those seated in the plush crimson velvet chairs, debates over where the new slaves would come from to ensure there was no pause in labor, and about how they should treat their own slaves afterward. Despite the chiming bells and the raising and dimming of the chandeliers, it took the boxes far longer to quiet than usual. They were still talking when the red curtains pulled back to reveal the seated orchestra, and it was a miracle they bothered to applaud for the conductor as he hobbled across the stage. That was when they noticed that every musician on the stage was wearing mourning black. That was when they shut up, and when the conductor raised his arms. It was not a symphony that filled the cavernous space. It was the song of Ealwe, then the song of Fenharrow, and Melisande, and Terrasen. Each nation that had people in those labor camps. And finally, not for pomp, or triumph, but to mourn what they had become. They played the song of Otterlin. When the final note finished, the conductor turned to the crowd, the musicians standing with him. As one, they looked to the boxes, to all those jewels bought with the blood of a continent. And without a word, without a bow or another gesture, they walked off the stage. The next morning, by royal decree, the theater was shut down. No one saw those musicians or their conductor again. Chapter 50. A cooling breeze kissed down Selena's neck. The forest had gone silent, as if the birds and insects had been quieted by her assault on the invisible wall. The barrier had gobbled down every spark of magic she'd launched at it, and now seemed to hum with fresh power. The scent of pine and snow wrapped around her, and she turned to find Rowan standing against a nearby tree. He'd been there for some time now, giving her space to work herself into exhaustion. But she was not tired, and she was not done. There was still wildfire in her mind, writhing, endless, damning. She let it dim to embers, let the grief and horror die down, too. Rowan said, "Word just arrived from Wendlin. Reinforcements aren't coming."
"They didn't come 10 years ago," she said,
her throat raw, though she had not spoken in hours. Cold, glittering calm was now flowing in her veins. Why should they bother helping now? His eyes flickered.
"Aelin."
When she only gazed into the darkening forest, he suddenly said,
"You do not have to stay. We can go to Dorinel tonight, and you can retrieve your knowledge from Maeve. You have my blessing."
"Do not insult me by asking me to leave. I am fighting. Nehemia would have stayed. My parents would have stayed."
"They also had the luxury of knowing that their bloodline did not end with them."
She gritted her teeth.
"You have experience. You are needed here. You are the only person who can give the Demi-Fae a chance of surviving. You are trusted and respected. So I am staying, because you are needed, and because I will follow you to whatever end."
And if the creatures devoured her body and soul, then she would not mind. She had earned that fate. For a long moment he said nothing, but his brows narrowed slightly.
"To whatever end?"
She nodded. He had not needed to mention the massacres, had not needed to try to console her. He knew, he understood without her having to say a word, what it was like. Her magic thrummed in her blood, wanting out, wanting more. But it would wait. It had to wait until it was time, until she had Narok and his creatures in her sight. She realized that Rowan saw each of those thoughts and more as he reached into his tunic and pulled out a dagger. Her dagger. He extended it to her, its long blade gleaming as if he'd been secretly polishing and caring for it these months. When she grasped the dagger, its weight lighter than she remembered, Rowan looked into her eyes, into the very core of her, and said,
"Fireheart."
Reinforcements from Wendlin weren't coming, not out of spite, but because a legion of Otterlin's men had attacked the northern border. 3,000 men in ships had launched a full-on assault. Wendlin had sent every last soldier to the northern coast, and there they would remain. The Demi-Fae were to face Narok and his forces alone. Rowan calmingly encouraged the non-fighters at the fortress to flee. but no one fled. Even Emrys refused, and Malachi merely said that where his mate went, he went. For hours, they adjusted their plans to accommodate the lack of reinforcements. In the end, they didn't have to change much, thankfully. Selena contributed what she could to the planning, letting Rowan order everyone about and adjust the masterful strategy in that brilliant head of his. She tried not to think about Endovir and Calicala, but the knowledge of it still simmered in her, brewing during the long hours that they debated. They planned until Emrys hauled up a pot from the kitchen and began whacking it with a spoon, ordering them out because dawn would come too soon. Within a minute of returning to their room, Selena was undressing and flopping into bed. Rowan took his time, however, peeling off his shirt and striding to the wash basin.
You did well helping me plan tonight.
She watched him wash his face, then his neck. You sound surprised. He wiped his face with a towel, then leaned against the dresser, bracing his hands against either end. The wood groaned, but his face remained still. Fireheart, he had called her. Did he know what that name meant to her? She wanted to ask, still had so many questions for him. But right now, after all the news of the day, she needed to sleep.
I sent word,
Rowan said, letting go of the dresser and approaching the bed. She'd left the sword from the mountain cave on the bedpost, and its smoldering ruby now glinted in the dim light as he ran a finger down the golden hilt.
To my cadre, as you like to call them.
She braced herself on her elbows. When?
A few days ago. I don't know where they all are or whether they'll arrive in time. Maeve might not let them come, or some of them might not even ask her. They can be unpredictable. And it may be that I just get the order to return to Doranelle and...
You actually called for aid?
His eyes narrowed. I just said that I did.
She stood, and he retreated a step. What changed your mind?
Some things are worth the risk.
He didn't back away again as she approached and said with every ember left in her shredded heart. I claim you, Rowan Whitethorn. I don't care what you say and how much you protest. I claim you as my friend. He just turned to the wash basin again. But she caught the unspoken words that he'd tried to keep her from reading on his face.
It doesn't matter. Even if we survive, when we go to Doranelle, you will walk out of Maeve's realm alone.
Emrys joined them, along with all the demi-fae at Mistward who had not been dispatched with messages, in traveling down to the healer's compound the next morning to help cart the patients to safety. Anyone who could not fight remained to help the sick and wounded, and Emrys declared he would stay there until the very end. So they left him, along with a small contingent of sentries in case things went very, very wrong. When Selena headed off into the trees with Rowan, she did not bother with goodbyes. Many of the others did not say farewell either. It seemed like an invitation for death. And Selena was fairly certain she wasn't on the good side of the gods. She was awoken that night by a large, calloused hand on her shoulder, shaking her awake. It seemed that death was already waiting for them. Chapter 51
Get your sword and your weapons and hurry,
Rowan said to Selena, as she instantly came to her feet, reaching for the dagger beside the bed. He was already halfway across the room, slinging on his clothes and weapons with lethal efficiency. She didn't bother with questions. He would tell her what was necessary. She hopped into her pants and boots.
I think we've been betrayed, Rowan said,
and her fingers caught on a buckle of her sword belt as she turned to the open window. Quiet. Absolute quiet in the forest. And along the horizon, a growing smear of blackness.
They're coming tonight, she breathed.
I did a sweep of the perimeter.
Rowan stuffed a knife into his boot.
It's as if someone told them where every trap, every warning bell is located. They'll be here within the hour.
Are the wardstones still working?
She finished braiding her hair and strapped her sword across her back.
Yes, they're intact. I raised the alarm, and Malachi and the others are readying our defenses on the walls.
A small part of her smiled at the thought of what it must have been like for Malachi to find a half-naked Rowan shouting orders in his room. She asked,
"Who would have betrayed us?"
I don't know. And when I find them, I'll splatter them on the walls. But for now, we have bigger problems to worry about.
The darkness on the horizon had spread, devouring the stars, the trees, the light.
What is that?
Rowan's mouth tightened into a thin line.
Bigger problems.
The wardstones were the last line of defense before the fortress itself. If Narok planned to lay siege to Mistward, they couldn't outlast him forever. But hopefully the barrier would wear down the creatures and their power a bit. On the battlements, in the courtyard and atop the towers, stood the Demi-Fae. Archers would take down as many men as possible once the barrier fell, and they would use the oak doors of the fortress as a bottleneck into the courtyard. But there were still the creatures and Narok, along with the darkness that they carried with them. Birds and animals streamed past the fortress as they fled, an exodus of flapping wings, padding feet, claws clicking on stone. Herding the animals to safety were the little folk, hardly more than a gleam of night-seeing eyes. Whatever darkness Narok and the creatures brought, once you went in, you did not come out. She was standing with Rowan just beyond the gates of the courtyard, the grassy expanse of earth between the fortress and the wardstones feeling far too small. The animals and little folk had stopped appearing moments before, and even the wind had died.
As soon as the barrier falls, I want you to put arrows through their eyes,
Rowan said to her, his bow slack in his hands.
Don't give them a chance to enthrall you or anyone. Leave the soldiers to the others.
They hadn't heard or seen any of the 200 men, but she nodded, gripping her own bow.
What about magic?
Use it sparingly. But if you think you can destroy them with it, don't hesitate. And don't get fancy. Take them down by any means possible.
Such icy calculation. Purebred, undiluted warrior. She could almost feel the aggression pouring off him. A reek was rising from beyond the barrier, and some of the sentries in the courtyard behind them began murmuring. A smell from another world, from whatever hellish creature lurked under mortal skin. Some straggling animals darted out of the trees, foaming at the mouth, the darkness behind them thickening.
Rowan,
she said, as she felt rather than saw them.
They're here.
At the edge of the trees, hardly 5 yards from the wardstones, the creatures emerged.
Selena started. Three.
Three, not two.
But the skinwalkers...
She couldn't finish the words as the three men surveyed the fortress. They were clad in deepest black, their tunics open to reveal the wordstone torques at their throats. The skinwalkers hadn't killed it.
No,
because there was that same perfect male looking straight at her, smiling at her, as if he could already taste her. A rabbit bolted out of the bushes, racing for the wardstones. Like the paw of a massive beast, the darkness behind the creatures lashed out, sweeping over the fleeing animal. The rabbit fell mid-leap, its fur turning dull and matted, bones pushing through as the life was sucked out of it. The sentries on the walls and towers stirred, some swearing. She had stood a chance of escaping the clutches of just one of those creatures. But all three together became something else. Something infinitely powerful.
"The barrier cannot be allowed to fall," Rowan said to her. "That blackness will kill anything it touches."
Even as he spoke, the darkness stretched around the fortress, trapping them. The barrier hummed, and the reverberation zinged against the soles of her boots. She shifted into her fey form, wincing against the pain. She needed the sharper hearing, the strength and healing. Still, the three creatures remained on the forest edge, the darkness spreading. No sign of the 200 soldiers. As one, the three half turned to the shadows behind them and stepped aside, heads bowed. Then, stalking out of the trees, Narok appeared. Unlike the others, Narok was not beautiful. He was scarred and powerfully built, and armed to the teeth. But he, too, had skin carved with those glittering black veins, and wore that torque of obsidian. Even from this distance, she could see the devouring emptiness in his eyes. It seeped toward them like blood in a river. She waited for him to say something, to parley and offer a choice between yielding to the king's power or death, to give some speech to break their morale. But Narok looked upon Mistward with a slow, almost delighted sweep of the head, drew his iron blade, and pointed at the curving wardstone gates. There was nothing Selena or Rowan could do, as a whip of darkness snapped out and struck the invisible barrier. The air shuddered, and the stones whined. Rowan was already moving toward the oak doors, shouting orders to the archers to ready themselves, and use whatever magic they had to shield against the oncoming darkness. Selena remained where she was. Another strike, and the barrier rippled.
"Aelin!"
Rowan snapped, and she looked over her shoulder at him.
"Get inside the gates!"
But she slung her bow across her back, and when she raised her hand, it was consumed with fire. In the woods that night, it balked from the flame.
"To use it, you'll have to get outside the barrier, or it'll just rebound against the walls."
"I know," she said quietly.
"The last time, you took one look at that thing and fell under its spell."
The darkness lashed again. "It won't be like last time," she said. Eyes on Narok, on his three creatures. Not when she had a score to settle. Her blood heated, but she said, "I don't know what else to do." Because if that darkness reached them, then all the blades and arrows would be useless. They wouldn't have a chance to strike. A cry sounded behind them, followed by a few more, then the clash of metal on metal. Someone shouted, "The tunnel! They've been let in through the tunnel!" For a moment, Selena just stood there, blinking. The escape tunnel. They had been betrayed, and now they knew where the soldiers were, creeping through the underground network, let in perhaps because the wardstones, with that strange sentience, were too focused on the threat above to be able to contain the one below. The shouting and fighting grew louder. Rowan had stationed their weaker fighters inside to keep them safe, right in the path of the tunnel entrance. It would be a slaughterhouse. "Rowan!" Another blow to the barrier from the darkness, and another. She began walking toward the stones, and Rowan growled.
Do not take one more step.
She kept going. Inside the fortress, screaming had begun. Pain and death and terror. Each step away from it tore at her, but she headed to the stones, toward the megalith gates. Rowan grabbed her elbow.
That was an order.
She knocked his hand away. You're needed inside. Leave the barrier to me.
You don't know if it'll work.
It will work, she snarled. I'm the expendable one, Rowan.
You are heir to the throne of...
Right now, I am a woman who has a power that might save lives. Let me do this. Help the others. Rowan looked at the ward stones, at the fortress and the sentries scrambling to help below, weighing, calculating. At last, Rowan said,
Do not engage them. You focus on that darkness and keeping it away from the barrier. And that's it. Hold the line, Aelin.
But she didn't want to hold the line. Not when her enemy was so close. Not when the weight of those souls at Calicullah and Endovir pressed on her, screaming as loudly as the soldiers inside the fortress. She had failed all of them. She had been too late. And it was enough. But she nodded, like the good soldier Rowan believed she was, and said, Understood.
They will attack you the moment you set foot outside the barrier, he said, releasing her arm.
Her magic began to boil in her veins.
Have a shield ready.
I know, was her only answer, as she neared the barrier and the swirling dark beyond. The curving stones of the gateway loomed, and she drew the sword from her back with her right hand, her left hand enveloped in flame. Nehemia's people, butchered. Her own people, butchered. Her people. Selena stepped under the archway of stones, magic zinging and kissing her skin. Just a few steps would take her outside the barrier. She could feel Rowan lingering, waiting to see if she would survive the first few moments. But she would. She was going to burn these things into ash and dust. This was the least she owed those murdered in Endovir and Calicullah. The least she could do, after so long. A monster to destroy monsters. The flames on her left hand burned brighter. As Selena stepped beyond the archway and into the beckoning abyss. Chapter 52. The darkness lashed at Selena the moment she passed beyond the invisible barrier. A wall of flame seared across the spear of blackness, and, just as she'd gambled, the blackness recoiled, only to strike again, swift as an asp. She met it blow for blow, willing the fire to spread, a wall of red and gold encasing the barrier behind her. She ignored the reek of the creatures, the hollowness of the air at her ears, the overwhelming throbbing in her head. So much worse beyond the protection of the wards, especially now that all three creatures were gathered. But she did not give them one inch, even as blood began trickling from her nose. The darkness lunged for her, simultaneously assaulting the wall, punching holes through her flame. She patched them by reflex, allowing the power to do as it willed, but with the command to protect, to keep that barrier shielded. She took another step beyond the stone gateway. Narok was nowhere to be seen, but the three creatures were waiting for her. Unlike the other night in the woods, they were armed with long, slender swords that they drew with their unearthly grace. And then they attacked. Good. She did not look them in the eyes, nor did she acknowledge the bleeding from her nose and the pressure in her ears. She merely called in a shield of fire around her left forearm and began swinging that ancient sword. Whether Rowan lingered to see her break his first order, then his next, She didn't know. The three creatures kept coming at her, swift and controlled, as if they'd had eons to practice swordplay, as if they were all of one mind, one body. Where she deflected one, another was there. Where she punched one with flame and steel, another was ducking beneath it to grab her. She could not let them touch her, could not let herself meet their gaze. The shield around the barrier burned hot at her back, the darkness of the creatures stinging and biting at it, but she held firm. She had not lied to Rowan about that, about protecting the wall. One of them swept its blade at her, not to kill, to incapacitate. It was second nature, somehow, that flames leapt down her blade as she struck back, willing fire into the sword itself. When it met the black iron of the creature, blue sparks danced, so bright that she dared to look into the creature's face to glimpse surprise, horror, rage. The hilt of the sword was warming, comforting in her hand, and the red stone glowed as if with a fire of its own. The three creatures stopped in unison, their sensual mouths pulling back from their two white teeth in a snarl. The one in the center, the one who had tasted her before, hissed at the sword. Goldrin. The darkness paused, and she used its distraction to patch her shields, a chill snaking up her spine even as the flames warmed her. She lifted the sword higher and advanced another step. But you are not Aethryl, beloved of the Dark Queen. One of them said. Another said,
And you are not Brennan of the Wildfire.
How do you...
But the words caught in her throat as a memory struck, from months ago, a lifetime ago, of a realm that was in between, of the thing that lived inside Cain speaking. To her and... Elena. Elena, daughter of Brannan. You were brought back, it said. All the players in the unfinished game. A game that had begun at the dawn of time, when a demon race had forged the word keys and used them to break into this world, and Maeve had used their power to banish them. But some demons had remained trapped in Irelia and waged a second war centuries later, when Elena fought against them. What of the others, who had been sent back to their realm? What if the King of Otterlin, in learning of the keys, had also learned where to find them, where to harness them? Oh, gods. You are the Vog, she breathed. The three things inside those mortal bodies smiled.
We are princes of our realm.
And what realm is that? She poured her magic into the shield behind her. The Vog prince in the center seemed to reach toward her without moving an inch. She sent a punch of flame at him, and he curled back.
A realm of eternal dark and ice and wind, he said. And we have been waiting a very, very long time to taste your sunshine again.
The King of Otterlin was either more powerful than she could imagine, or the most foolish man to ever live, if he thought he could control these demon princes. Blood dripped onto her tunic from her nose. Their leader purred,
Once you let me in, girl, there shall be no more blood. Or pain.
She sent another wall of flame searing at them. Brannan and the others beat you into oblivion once, she said, though her lungs were burning. We can do it again. Low laughter.
We were not beaten, only contained, until a mortal man was foolish enough to invite us back in, to use these glorious bodies.
Were the men who had once occupied them still inside?
If she cut off their heads, that torque of wordstone, would the creatures vanish, or be unleashed in another form?
This was far, far worse than she had expected.
Yes,
the leader said, taking a step toward her and sniffing.
You should fear us and embrace us.
Embrace this, she snarled, and flung a hidden dagger from her vambrace at his head. He was so swift that it scraped his cheek rather than wedging itself between its eyes. Black blood welled and flowed. He raised a moon-white hand to examine it.
I shall enjoy devouring you from the inside out,
he said. And the darkness lunged for her again. The battle was still raging inside the fortress, which was good, because it meant they hadn't all died yet. And Selena was still swinging Goldrin against the three Vog princes, though it grew heavier by the moment, and the shield behind her was beginning to fray. She had not had time to tunnel down into her power, or to consider rationing it. The darkness that the Vog brought with them continued to strike the wall, so Selena threw up shield after shield, fire flaming through her blood, her breath, her mind. She gave her magic free rein, only asking it to keep the shield behind her alive. It did so, gobbling up her reserves. Rowan had not come back to help. But she told herself he would come, and he would help, because it was not weakness to admit she needed him, needed his help, and... Her lower back cramped, and it was all she could do to keep her grip on the legendary blade, as the leader of the Vog princes swiped for her neck.
No.
A muscle twinged near her spine, twisting until she had to bite down a scream as she deflected the blow. It couldn't be a burnout. Not so soon. Not after practicing so much. Not... A hole tore through the shield behind her, and the darkness slammed into the barrier, making the magic ripple and shriek. She flung a thought toward it, and as the flame patched it up, her blood began to pound. The princes were closing in again. She growled, sending a wall of white-hot flame at them, pushing them back, 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 while she took a deep breath. But blood came coughing out, instead of air. If she ran inside the gates, how long would the shield last before it fell to the princes in their ancient darkness? How long would any of those inside last? She didn't dare look behind to see who was winning. It didn't sound good. There were no cries of victory, only pain and fear. Her knees quaked, but she swallowed the blood in her mouth and took another breath. She had not imagined it would end like this, and maybe it was what she deserved after turning her back on her kingdom. One of the Vog princes ripped a hand through the wall of flame separating them, the darkness shielding his flesh from being melted off. She was about to send another blast at him, when a movement from the trees caught her eye. Far up the hill, as if they had come racing down from the mountains and had not stopped for food or water, or slept, were a towering man, a massive bird, and three of the largest predators she had ever seen. Five in all. Answering their friend's desperate call for aid. They hurtled through the trees and over stones. Two wolves, one black and one moon white. The powerfully built male. The birds swooping low over them. And a familiar mountain cat racing behind. Heading for the darkness looming between them and the fortress. The black wolf skidded to a halt as they neared the darkness, as if sensing what it could do. The screaming in the fortress rose. If the newcomers could destroy the soldiers, the survivors could take the tunnel and flee before the dark consumed everything. Sweat stung Selena's eyes, and pain sliced into her so deep that she wondered if it was permanent. But she had not lied to Rowan about saving lives. So she did not stop to doubt or consider, as she flung the remnants of her power toward Rowan's five friends, a bridge of flame through the darkness, cleaving it in two, a path toward the gates behind her. To their credit, Rowan's friends did not hesitate as they raced for it, the wolves leading the way, the bird, an osprey, close behind. She poured her power into the bridge, gritting her teeth against the agony as the five rushed past, not sparing her a glance. But the golden mountain cat slowed as he charged through the gates behind her. As her chest seized, and she coughed, her blood bright on the grass.
"He's inside," she choked out. "Help him."
The great cat lingered, assessing her and the wall and the princes fighting against her flame.
"Go,"
she wheezed. The bridge through the darkness collapsed, and she staggered back a step as that black power slammed into her, the shield, the world. The blood was roaring so loudly in her ears that she could barely hear when the mountain cat raced for the fortress. Rowan's friends had come.
Good.
Good that he would not be alone, that he had people in the world. She coughed blood again, splattering it on the ground, on the legs of the Volg prince. She barely moved before he slammed her into her own flames, and she hit the magical wall beneath, as hard and unforgiving as if it were made of stone. The only way into the fortress was through the ward gates. She swiped with Goldrin, but the blow was feeble. Against the Volg, against this horrible power that the King of Otterlin possessed, the army at his disposal. It was all useless. As useless as the vow she'd made to Nehemia's grave. As useless as an heir to a broken throne and a broken name. The magic was boiling her blood. The darkness, it would be a relief compared to the hell smoldering in her veins. The Volg prince advanced, and part of her was screaming. Screaming at herself to get up, to keep fighting, to rage and roar against this horrible end. But moving her limbs, even breathing, had become a monumental effort. She was so tired. The fortress was a hell of yelling and fighting and gore, but Rowan kept swinging his blades, holding his position at the tunnel mouth as soldier after soldier poured in. The scout leader, Bass, had let them in, Luca had told Rowan. The other demi-fae who had conspired with Bass wanted the power the creatures offered, wanted a place in the world. From the devastation in the bleeding boy's eyes, Rowan knew that Bass had already met his end. He hoped Luca hadn't been the one to do it. The soldiers kept coming, highly trained men who were not afraid of the demi-fae or of the little magic that they bore. They were armed with iron and did not differentiate between young and old, male and female, as they hacked and slaughtered. Rowan was not drained, not in the least. He had fought for longer and in worse conditions. But the others were flagging, especially as soldiers continued flooding the fortress. Rowan yanked his sword from the gut of a falling soldier, dagger already slicing across the neck of the next, when growling shook the stones of the fortress. Some of the demi-fae froze, but Rowan nearly shuddered with relief as twin wolves leapt down the staircase and closed their jaws around the necks of two Otterlanian soldiers. Great wings flapped, and then a glowering, dark-eyed male was in front of him, swinging a sword older than the occupants of Mistward. Vaughn merely nodded at him before taking up a position, never one to waste words. Beyond him, the wolves were nothing short of lethal, and did not bother to shift into their fae forms as they took down soldier after soldier, leaving those that got through to the male waiting behind them. That was all Rowan had to see before he sprinted for the stairs, dodging the stunned and bloodied demi-fae. Darkness had not fallen, which meant she still had to be breathing, she still had to be holding the line, but... A mountain cat skidded to a halt on the stairwell landing and shifted. Rowan took one look at Gavriel's tawny eyes and said,
"Where is she?"
Gavriel held out an arm, as if to stop him.
She's in bad shape, Rowan. I think...
Rowan ran, shoving aside his oldest friend, shouldering